The palms, palm branches. Does everybody know how to make a cross out of them? All right, you ready to learn? All right, you take the palm and you turn it upside. You know it has a pointy end and a blunt end? Do you follow that? Pointy end, real? Turn it upside down. All right, so you got the blunt end, and then you take, let's see. You got a, yeah, north or south. You fold over like about a 3-inch little swath of this thing. And that's the top of the cross. Now you form the top of the cross, okay? And you sort of put your finger kind of in the, you know, middle of it. I tried this at the church and somebody said, in another church, and somebody said, you just don't know what you're doing. I'm kind of making it up as I go, but not really. Now, you know how a cross has got a sort of the shorter bar? If you look at that cross, the one on the top is shorter than the one on the bottom. So now you want to make, see, between my thumb and, say, my finger right here, you want to make the bottom part of the cross. So you turn it up like that. All right? Now here's the trickiest part of all right, is you're in the middle, you got your fingers pinched in the middle part of the cross. Now you're going to need to make a fold that's a 45-degree angle. Are you with me? Going east. All right. And now you want to make it, you know, about the length that you got between where your fingers are pinched together and the top. Fold it back over. Now you see we're starting to have something that looks like a cross now, don't you? All right. I bet you know the next thing we're going to do. We got another fold to make, don't we? And you see where it is? Right here on the side. Now we got one problem. If you've got something that looks like a cross, well done. It was the Holy Spirit helping you and not me. So now we've got a problem because we've pinched our fingers. Now here's one thing you can do. You can just keep pinching it for the next 6 hours. Or you could put a paper clip there, and it'll dry, and it'll pretty much stay this way. Or you can make another one of these 45-degree turns, and then start wrapping around the center. Do you follow? Yeah, you go to the south, or the north, or... Yeah. Yeah. So you start wrapping diagonally. And then now you can just sort of freestyle it, but you're tying it. That's what you end up with. So it's a cross. We'll have some remedial hands-on instruction here a little bit later. I can't believe I got that this time. I was in front of a congregation and didn't get it, and somebody said, you're fired for like cross making. I guess that'd be a good thing. Now here's the thing. You see how pliable it is right now. And you can get it, we've got more, so you can get another if you want to try again. But it'll dry by this afternoon, those of us who've done this before. And then you won't be able to do anything with it. And it'll pretty much hold together. The trick is either that paper clip I told you about, if you lack the patience to hold it for the next 6 hours, or getting this tie fairly tight, and then it'll hold on. I'm going to put it right here. But then you can put it lots of places. We were at the Bible study, this is why this digression, by the way. We were at the Bible study this week, this Wednesday, and we were talking about Palm Sunday memories. And even as I asked the question, I thought, gosh, I wonder what mine are. I mean, I've got a lot of Easter Sunday memories, and I'll bet you do too. But Palm Sunday memories are more sort of diffuse. Does that make sense? Like, I don't have a specific one. I just think of a lot of Palm Sundays where we have palms involved. Now, not when I was a kid, because when I was a kid, I guess they didn't have the business of getting palms to churches as in shape as it is now. But now you can order palms like nobody's, you know, it's nothing to it. And then we get lots of palms and the florists are on it and that sort of thing. But when I was a kid, does anybody remember waving palms when you were really young? I don't remember doing much of that. But now we've got them. We've had them for quite a number of years. And then people remembered that. I remember that. I remember, and then I remember this business right here. I don't know. How many of you have done that before today? We've got some cross makers around here, right? These palms have an interesting kind of history in the church, because you know what we do with them besides waving them for just a moment while we sing, just a moment, and tickling people's ears. I saw you, Ken. I saw you up there tickling somebody's ears there with the palm branch. So after we're done with that, then we might make them into a cross. Do you know the other thing we do with these palms? We burn them. And they become ashes for next year. And we actually work hard to make that happen. So it's not just, oh, well, we couldn't find the palms this year. I mean, we were scrambling around this year. I said, do we have palms? And you know what we found for this year's Ash Wednesday is we found several of these. These were what I burned from our last celebration. And that there's some poignancy there. There's an English major word for you. There's some poignant, there's some bittersweetness there, isn't it? These palms that we shake and wave are an execution device. And then this is really what we're going to keep. I mean, sometimes we'll put, I don't know, around your home, or maybe you've seen somebody else's home, when the palm dries out, somebody will put it like behind a picture frame, maybe. And then sometimes we'll put these on a picture frame or behind a picture frame. I'm going to leave it here. There's some irony there. Here's the story that I remembered, and I hadn't remembered it in a long time. But I used to be a part of a church that was all praise and worship, all contemporary, sort of come as you are, blue jeans, you know, informal, and we did a lot of crazy things during worship. And so one Sunday, Palm Sunday, I was thinking, you know, we read about this story, and what's easy to miss is it's not just a parade, is it? That's what the cross business is about. This is a different kind of parade. It's a bitter, sweet parade, isn't it? Because there's got to be a catch in our throat when we're singing these hosannas, because we know this is the beginning of the week, right? The first day of the week. But we know by the end of the week what's going to happen. You can't forget that. Now, we also know that next Sunday Easter's coming, but we know that you can't get to Easter from here without this extraordinary tragedy happening. And we're going to commemorate that here at Waco by gathering together again Thursday night for a service of, I don't even know what to call it, silence, shame, remembering. And then I'm going to open up the church, something I've been doing for a number of years, between the hours of 12 and 3 when He hung on a cross. And then we'll just have a time of prayer here, just quiet. How often do we do that? The church now calls this Sunday Palm / Passion Sunday, because a lot of us don't get to make it to those midweek, they're not celebrations, those midweek worship opportunities. Sometimes because we're too busy, and sometimes I think because we don't want to go there, do we? It's very uncomfortable. A sense of our own culpability, you really, when you get right down to it, it wasn't the Jews that killed Jesus. It wasn't Pilate or the Romans that killed Jesus. I did, and so did you. He died for us. He was executed for us. And so sometimes I think we miss it because we're busy and we're not used to coming midweek, but sometimes I think we miss that stop, that detour, that dead end, if you will, between this Sunday, Palm Sunday, and Easter Sunday, because we don't want to go there. So I was struggling with that as a pastor. I'm not going to do this today, but what I thought I would do to play around is I would sort of incorporate the congregation as actors on a stage. And so what I had people do is stand up, and I pretended to be a director of a play, a passion play that we were going to do. So I said, what I need you to do is I need you to, you know, celebrate and sing Hosanna and not do it like we do it singing the hymns or even just a minute ago, you know? I mean, we're still a little subdued, aren't we? I want you to compare what we did just a minute ago or what we do any given Sunday with, say, going to a basketball game during March Madness, right? Has anybody ever been to a college basketball game, by the way? Do you know what you do after the college basketball game? You take 4 200-milligram ibuprofen because your head is just splitting. The din never stops. People lose their minds. And don't try preaching the next day if you go to a Saturday game because you won't have a voice to do it with. Because what have you been doing the entire time? Cheering! So that's the flavor we were trying to get. We're like, come on, let's belt it out. Right? Running up and down the aisle, you know. And people really started getting into it after a while. I mean, this is a congregation where it was like we did things like that, so it wasn't too weird. And so people were just yelling, just like I did right there. Can you imagine if all of us did that? Not use our regular voices like Barney says, but we really just threw it out. Right? Just with from the gut, people, you know, lifting their hands and yelling and that sort of thing. And then, and this was the sort of thing that you couldn't really practice before we actually did it. We just had to be in the moment. Well, then I said, now we're going to practice scene two. You know what scene two is? Yeah, scene two is Friday morning. Same crowd. Same gut reaction, right? Only now we're not cheering, or maybe we are cheering, but for something else. This crowd wants blood. And it was amazing how people got into it. A little scary. That's a Palm Sunday memory that I have. I remember when I was in the sixth grade and we did this play, and I was playing this character that was not very popular in the play. And there was one rehearsal that we did, and people were supposed to be yelling at me, at my character. And it just tore me up. I mean, I was over after the rehearsal, and I was just tears running down my face and everything. And the director came over and said, "What are you upset about?" And I said, "Man, those people hate me. Did you hear them yelling?" And they go, and she said, "No, no, no, they're just acting." And I looked up at her. I was in the sixth grade. I was 12 years old. I looked up and I said, "They're not that good of actors. There's something there. They weren't acting out." I felt it. And I felt it running up and down that aisle. It was interesting being in the aisle and being the focus of that. It'd just be a couple, 2 or 3 years later, we moved into a new sanctuary in that church. And I had read about this, that when you do that, when you change, can you imagine if we built another sanctuary and we closed this one down? By the way, this church has done that at least twice, haven't we? Right? There was a sanctuary over across the parking lot, and then there's one now. The church doesn't even exist anymore by the that we built in 1791 or thereabouts. So we have moved a couple of times. It's a traumatic thing. We had read about this, and I started hearing people say it too, that this wasn't the church I joined. And there was a kind of sadness there, but also a little bit of anger. We had read that if you made a move like that, it might catalyze, it might trigger some maybe not so wonderful things in the congregation. And this same congregation that had gotten so into the praise and the cheering, but also into the calling for his head, this congregation split violently. Just after we had pledged, you know, $1 million to this building plan. That church should have gone bankrupt 1,000 times, but money was the least of our worries. Do you know what I mean? It was like a civil war. I remember it was in the summer, late summer, when the church split, and some people had been away on vacation, and you knew where the sides were. You knew where the sides were. And I remember people would come back from vacation and be nice to me as their pastor, but I knew that they were going to inevitably choose the other side. And so I didn't even know how to act. You know, I almost wanted to say, "You might want to rethink about being nice to me, because in a week or so you'll find out you're not supposed to." And sure enough, they did. And these were people we had held hands together by hospital beds, and we had loved each other, and we had worshiped together, and we had sung praises, and it was devastating. I don't know how to tell you. It was like that Palm Sunday lived out in reality. And I remember crying out to God. I didn't really at that point, I mean, it was a, felt like as a pastor, a huge kind of failure. But I didn't really do, you know, I just sort of kept going day by day and crying out to God. And I would say things like, what in the world is going on? We did everything that you wanted, didn't we? I mean, we loved these people. We worked hard. When it was time to expand, I mean, we only built because there were lots of people coming to worship, right? And boy, that was heady stuff, like Palm Sunday cheering. And we built this wonderful new sanctuary. And what went wrong, God? And I remember hearing from God saying, did you love these people so they would be nice to you? And I had to sit back and think, well, no, that's not why. I mean, it was unconditional love, right? Maybe that was me saying it or maybe God saying it. So what's the problem, God said? You're serving me. Is that love lost? Well, no. But it's hard, God. It's hard to love. To love and be rejected. And that's what this story is about, isn't it? Loving anyway. Perhaps even when we know how it's going to turn out. Perhaps even when we know that's the way it's going to go. To love anyway. I look back and knowing what I know now, would I change anything? No. The truth is, I did know. I mean, that church was split in every way but in every way but reality, right? And that church was split when we arrived 7 years before it did split, is the truth of it. They had different names for different parts of the congregation. Someone would call themselves the new church name, and then they would refer to the other people as the old church name. And they weren't talking about age. They were just talking about north and south is the way that worked. It's a bittersweet thing, and I guess that's the Palm Sunday memory that I have to offer. And I think it connects with this story, that kind of pain, that sort of tragedy in the midst of love and loving anyway. That's what's going on here, isn't it? I want to just lift up a couple of things. First of all, this sort of subterfuge or whatever you want to call it about the donkey business or the colt. It's the colt in Luke. You know, Jesus says, I want you to go into the village ahead. You'll find this colt tied up. He'll be wearing a little ribbon on his left ear. No, it doesn't say that, but, you know, it's just interesting how it sort of sounds like a spy movie, doesn't it? All right? And then when you go untie the colt, somebody may come up to you and they'll say, what are you doing untying that colt? And you're supposed to say, the sun shines brightly on the hills of Dover. And then they, you know, whatever. You're supposed to give them this sort of code. Doesn't it start sounding like a little bit of a... Now, I know. We read that. We're like, well, Jesus knew everything. He was just working his Jesus magic again, wasn't he? He was just like, wait a minute. We need a colt. I know where one is. Hold on a minute. I'm looking. There's one right there. Okay, so you'll find him. He's tied up. What? Maybe he had been there. Maybe he set it all up. This sounds like a spy movie. They were hiding. That's part of this story, isn't it? They knew, Jesus knew, certainly, the disciples knew that there would be trouble in Jerusalem, that there were people in Jerusalem that wanted him dead. And there was this like, I don't know, they're sort of playing games, and it's all through the story. There's this weird part. Do you remember there's a weird part when Jesus is talking about swords and Peter says, hey, we got 5 swords here or something like that. And Jesus says, yes, that's enough. He doesn't say, put those swords down. We can't have those swords. And you remember that one part of the story where Peter cuts somebody's ear off, you know, with the sword. And then Jesus is like, oh, come on. There's some weird stuff going on here. It's like two different stories. The story we know, and then there's another story playing out where they're hiding from the authorities and they're bringing swords and maybe it'll be an insurrection. There's a couple of different stories going on here, I think. It's maybe what the cheering and the jeering are all about. There's a line in this story that I've read I don't know how many times, but it really stood out to me this time when we were looking at it again at our Wednesday Bible study. We're really trying to approach with sort of fresh eyes. Does that make sense? And sort of see something in a different way. And I'm hoping to do that for you today. But there's a line where it says, they put him on the colt. I want you to just, can you visualize that with me? Jesus is, I don't know how big this colt was, but it doesn't have a saddle on it. We know that, right? This colt's never been ridden, which would have been a kind of an interesting trick getting on to it, wouldn't it? I don't know if you know anything about colts that haven't been ridden. I'm not really a horse guy or a colt guy or a donkey guy or whatever it was, but I don't know if I'd want to get on a colt that had never been ridden before. Maybe I'd have somebody else try. You could try, and then after you get thrown 15 times and he gets tired, maybe I'll get on him then. So besides that, he doesn't have a saddle on him. They've just thrown their cloaks over him. We know that. So there's no pommel to hold. Is that what you call it? Is that the kind of the official word? There's nothing to hold on to. I mean, I suppose they could grab his mane or something like that. Jesus is wearing what? He's probably got a robe of some kind on, and I don't know, maybe he's got underwear under there, but you got to, you know, he's got this robe on. Like, getting onto a colt, I don't know. I mean, when you start thinking about the mechanics of that. Now here's a picture for you. They put him on the colt. What does that look like exactly? Here, put your arms around my neck, Jesus. We're going to, what, we throw him on there? Was somebody doing this? That doesn't sound like it. It didn't say they held their hands so he could climb on. They put him on the colt after he celebrates that meal, you know, which he takes the bread, the two loaves and the two fishes and the five loaves, isn't it? And he makes food for 5,000. Part of the story says he stole away into the mountains to pray alone, because if he didn't, what were they going to do? Do you remember that part of the story? Do you remember? They were going to seize him and make him king. And he had to steal away in the night. It's not the first time in the story. This sort of feels like something like that as well. They put him on that colt. He didn't get on the colt. He's like, not this way. But at this point, he wasn't going to stop them. This sort of set me back, rocked me back, I should say. This is the kind of parade that if you were in it, waving your, you know, palms and cheering and that sort of thing, you could look in Jesus' eyes and see something that maybe nobody else at that parade would have seen. Do you see it now? We're always coming to Him with our Santa Claus list of things for Him to do for us. Even the story, did you hear the story that Tom read? They're saying Hosanna because why? For the miracles. You keep performing, Jesus, we'll keep putting you on that horse. But once you stop, well, look out. And now, making a cross out of a palm doesn't seem such a strange thing to do at all, does it? There's a catch. And the question today is, do you understand your role in this story? Do you understand the part He's asking you to play? Because you can hold on to the Santa Claus list that you have. You can hold on to that expectation of miracles, right? Of this projection that we have, the kind of Jesus that you want Him to be. And He will die all over again. He will be dead to you. It won't be Jesus you'll be worshiping. It'll be a kind of idol, a kind of Jesus of our own making. Or you can look full into His wonderful and sometimes frightening and sometimes terrible face. Because as He goes to the cross, you know what He says? Will you join me? Will you join me and lose your life? Will you join me and lay down your expectations and allow me to show you something you can't even imagine asking me about? Will you love? Will you love those who hate you? I'm talking about real people. I'm not talking about, I don't know, just sort of a flowery example we might think. In fact, maybe you could just kind of visualize in your mind or think of somebody with whom you are just in, what do they call it? Irreconcilable difference. Some of those people I told you about here. This is hard work, isn't it? But you're not alone. None of us are. We've had a very difficult week here at Whatcoat. Yesterday morning, after struggling with cancer that was just running all over her body, Margie Pruitt died. And we had been able to celebrate, celebrate communion at her deathbed Wednesday. Just Dale and Margie and me, and Margie was sort of there and not there. And it was so hard for me because as a pastor, I don't have anything to give there. And I wish I could. I wish I could wave a wand. I remember one time we took my daughter, Joy. She had wrenched her arm. And all day long, we took her to the pediatrician and different specialists. And we finally found one who knew what they were doing. And they distracted Joy for a second. And they went, boop! And they popped her arm back in, her shoulder back into joint, and she didn't even cry. She started to cry, but it felt good so immediately. It was just like, it was a miracle. And I remember as her dad and as a young pastor thinking, how I wish I could do that. And Joyce Knarr, as some of you know, is also, what do they call it? Actively dying. Would you just lift that whole family up in prayer? And we're going to gather. We're going to gather here on, I guess it's Holy Saturday, that quiet day when Jesus was in the grave between Good Friday, huh? Terrible Friday, and then Easter Sunday morning. We're going to gather here at 2 o'clock. We're going to light that resurrection candle for the first time and do one of the most profoundly rebellious things that we do as Christians. One of the things we'll say is, this is not the end. That's that other side of that wonderful, miraculous, and terrible face of Jesus Christ saying, not what you want, but are you ready for what God wants? Are you ready to go beyond all those limitations of your will even? You know, what does Paul say? The good I want to do, I don't do. I do the very things that I don't want to do. Who will save me from this body of sin and death, Paul writes. And who is that? That's Jesus. But you got to trade. And some of that trade doesn't involve this big bombastic thing. Some of that trade involves doing just what we're doing this morning, showing up. Showing up in each other's lives. Continuing, even when it's hard, even and especially when we let each other down. Just hanging in there with each other. That's a sign of His presence among us. When we don't live up to our expectations of each other. And sometimes that means calling each other out and one-on-one, I hope, if we're following Jesus' clear commandment on the issue, saying, I'm hurting because of something you did. and giving each other the opportunity to say, I'm so sorry, let's try again. We had a supper last night, and it was a bittersweet thing for me because, I don't know if you saw, I was dressed up in my little pastor clothes. That's because I just finished spending time with Margie's family, praying with them and holding their hands, and then I stopped by to eat spaghetti, and then I went to sing with Joyce. It's just me and her. You know, she's not at the point now where she can say anything back, but I know she heard. I felt like she was singing with me. So it was kind of strange, kind of sitting in the midst of this celebration, eating spaghetti. But, you know, I think it was Joyce's husband, right, that made that spaghetti recipe. Bob, somebody told me, they said, we used the spaghetti recipe, the sauce recipe, right, that was actually written in his hand. That's something powerful, isn't it? That's the church in the most ordinary things. And people can make fun of us and people can talk about us being hypocrites. You know what I say when somebody says the church is full of hypocrites? No, we always have room for one more. Come on. Come on. We're not here because we're perfect. We're hanging in there, aren't we? We're hanging. We're hanging in there. Because He will never let us go. And yeah, there's a scary part about this, but what did He say over Jerusalem? He said, if they only knew where their peace was. Can I invite you to go to that place, precisely that place you don't want to go? This Holy Week especially. Somebody sat down and they talked with me this week about a burden they were carrying. They said, I made a promise to myself that I would talk to someone about this. I would lay it down. Enough of the cheering and the jeering. Can we get beyond that? You have business with Jesus Christ, and He has business with you. And it might be whipping up spaghetti sauce, or it might be singing beside someone who doesn't seem to be listening. It might be just holding on to someone. I think He meant what He said when He said, love your enemies. Maybe we can just start there. Maybe there's somebody that, aren't you tired of carrying that? Lay it down, He says. Lay it down and come follow me. Amen.